Greetings, friends. My name is Jessa McLean, and I'm here to provide you with some blueprints of disruption. This weekly podcast is dedicated to amplifying the work of activists, examining power structures, and sharing the success stories from the grassroots. Through these discussions, we hope to provide folks with the tools and the inspiration they need to start to dismantle capitalism, decolonize our spaces, and bring about the political revolution that we know we need. Welcome, gentlemen. Could you please introduce yourself?
My name's Lauren. I live in Hamilton, Ontario. I'm a member of ACORN. I've been a member for about just over a year. And I'm experiencing rent eviction myself, and here to help talk about it.
You're currently experiencing one?
Yeah, I'm fighting a rent eviction right now, yeah.
Okay, we will certainly get to that, Lauren. Thank you. Evan, welcome.
Hi, happy Friday, guys. I'm Evan. I've been a member of Ottawa ACORN for the past couple of years. Really happy to be here on Blueprints of Disruption. And really excited to be talking about, Hamilton's recent victory in winning that anti-rent eviction bylaw and the momentum that we're seeing for this sort of solution to the affordability crisis all across Ontario.
Just to start with the reason we're all here today is the new report that you guys released. Can you tell us a little bit about what it was about and maybe some background on what rent evictions are, just in case anyone doesn't already know. I'm sure most people do, but
they might not.
Yeah, so a rent eviction is when a tenant is served a N13 notice by their landlord. And in the N13 notice, the landlord is claiming that they're going to have to do significant renovations and that the tenant has to leave in order to do whatever work they do. Basically, just a terrible notice for people to receive and usually a real shock.
Because essentially it's an eviction notice, right?
That's
like
right.
You know no different whether they're renovating the unit or they just need you to get the hell out. You have a serious crisis on your hand at that point.
That's right, yeah. And at which point most people are in a lot of shock and they're not sure what to do at that point once they've received this rent eviction notice. A lot of people have never even heard of a rent eviction notice, let alone what N13 means, and often are confused as to, you know, what their rights are or what they're going to do. A lot of people even leave without even thinking about it, just out of fear, thinking that they have no way to fight it or no rights or anything.
Yeah, and can you tell us a bit about, I guess, what were some of the findings in the report around rent evictions? Because, you know, rent evictions have been happening for a while, but it seems to have increased dramatically.
Yeah, I guess in the new report they found that they've really increased, you know, probably tripled or, you know, even more, especially in, you know, big cities like Toronto and Hamilton. It's just, you know, out of control. Toronto, it's well over 1,000. And Hamilton, we're probably well over 500 rent evictions. And, it was a pretty scary report for renters, you know, across Canada.
I want to know, Evan, you've been organizing with ACORN for a couple of years, so you've been talking to lots of tenants. You are a renter. Did the results surprise you, or were they validating to what you had already been, well, in Lauren's case, experiencing firsthand or hearing a lot about? Because, like, just glossing over, in some places it went up 545% for N13s and then N12s were going up 160% over the, I think, 2021-2022 period. Like, that shocked me to read, but I don't do tenant organizing.
Yeah, so, yeah, the numbers, I think, are actually quite instructive. So overall, there were, across Ontario, there was a total of 20,541 N-12s and N-13s filed between 2017 and 2021. Wherever we see these increases, it's important to know that a lot of renovations take place even without N-13s or N-12s being filed. So, which means that the, you know, the growth of rent evictions is actually greater. We've provided a conservative estimate, and the conservative estimate is already alarming enough. A 545% increase in the number of N-13s in Ottawa, and that makes Ottawa number three in the province. There's also a 158% increase in the number of N-12s filed between 2017 and 2021. ACORN has been organizing against rent evictions in Manor Village, in De l'Église, that's right, in Vanier, and on Zeta Blanc. We've recently, well, ACORN members who were fighting there in on Zeta Blanc and Vanier did succeed in winning the right to stay and preventing the rent evictions, well, their rent evictions from taking place. But that was not before a number of other long-term residents of those affordable houses had been evicted because of the intimidation tactics of the landlords who were the developers who were seeking to evict the tenants so that they could demolish and replace that housing. Validating is not the sort of term I'm looking for. I know I've just rambled. I think these numbers are persuasive for everybody because I think everybody's aware that we are in an affordability crisis, and the rent evictions are a big contributor to that affordability crisis. Because when a person is displaced from a unit, the landlord then has free rein to spike the rent to essentially whatever they want. And as opposed to the guidelines which are in place for tenants who do not vacate their unit. So as long as there is a financial incentive, and there is, to undertake these rent evictions, they're going to continue. And that's going, and the numbers should be alarming that for everybody and anybody who's interested in living in an affordable housing situation, we need to take action because it's going to get worse before it gets better if we do not have laws in place to prevent these.
There was one stat that stood out to me talking about affordability, which was talking about, you know, affordability being defined, of course, as rent that's no more than 30% of anyone's income. Used to be 20% back in the day. They raised it to 30. It's an arbitrary number as it is, but that in both Toronto and Ottawa, there were zero units on the market that met that description for the bottom 20% of earners, which is a massive thing. So, you know, when we're talking about rent evictions, it goes far beyond, you know, having to move from a place where you're living. It means maybe having to leave your neighborhood, having to leave your community that you know, because you're not going to be able to find anything within that community. And, you know, I mean, just moving alone is stressful enough. It's defined as one of the most stressful events in someone's life, let alone losing your community. So, you know, you were just talking about what action can be taken about this. I know Hamilton has been taking some action. Lauren, can you tell me a bit about the recent rent eviction bylaws in Hamilton?
Sure. Yeah. And actually, it's okay if I just add something to what Evan was saying.
Of course.
Just before we get in that. When Evan brought up about, you know, how, you know, the numbers are really higher too, because we don't really see everything in the report was based on stuff that was filed, you know, and with LTB, I believe, right? And one of the big crises is a lot of lack of shelter spaces too. So the huge increase on the shelter system and homelessness itself is something that often, you know, isn't you know, really talked about as much with the whole rent-eviction situation, that crisis and stuff, right? But yeah, on January, I guess it was 17th, the city of Hamilton, after a lot of work, passed this, the new, it's basically like an anti-rent eviction bylaw. It's the renovation and I forget the rest of it, the other name of it. But they, through several years of work with Acorn and the several city councilors, they were able to finally work out an actual bylaw with a lot of details that are gonna, you know, be able to hold landlords accountable for, you know, and hopefully preventing all this displacement, you know, of people, right? I know Acorn's been working on it since 2019, and so hopefully once it kicks in, it'll protect a lot of different all sorts of renters. Landlords are going to have to apply for a license in order to evict somebody, and within 7 days of issuing the N13, so which right now there's obviously no, you know, no timeline. They don't have to ask the city for permission, and so as well in the new bylaw, landlords are going to have to show a lot, much more proof, building permits. They're going to have an engineer's report, and they're going to have to really prove to the city that, and a lot of new staff that's going to be hired to oversee it, they're going to have to prove that the units need to be vacant, and which right now there's just really no oversight. It's kind of whatever the landlord says, the landlord basically gets away with, right? And they have to, in within the new bylaw starting in 2025, because they don't start till January of next year, which is kind of a drag.
That's a long time to wait.
It is. Like, folks like myself and a lot of other people are, we're all caught in this limbo gray area where we still are continuing to suffer all the tactics where they try to get you out. And what, once the bylaw is passed, they're going to also have to, there's going to be actual, they're going to have to provide the tenants with accommodations. And accommodations, not just like a hotel room, but accommodations that is similar to their unit. You know, a comparable living situation while these renovations are taking place. And then tenants are going to be allowed to go back to their unit and at least have that, that, you know, the first right of refusal, which is actually technically supposed to happen now, but it doesn't happen. And and then if they don't comply with all this stuff, they decide that they're going to go rogue and disobey the bylaw, then there's going to be daily fines. So each day that they've, displaced somebody, there's going to be a fine for each day. And at this point, the city of Hamilton and their staff are still trying to come to a good amount for that fine. As someone who's been going through this, I hope it's the higher end of an amount to, you know, really, really take away the incentive to, you know, basically throw people out.
I do worry about seeing a surge in rent evictions in the time between now and when that bylaw comes in. That does concern me, and I'm glad, you know, I'm sure Acorn you'll have a lot of work on your hands to help fight as many of those as possible. One thing that I was just talking with a tenant organizer here in Toronto. And one thing that he pointed out to me that I didn't know was that in terms of bylaw enforcement officers, like the rent safe inspectors, there's only 10 of them for the whole city. So oftentimes there's not nearly enough enforcement of the bylaws. So I guess I wanted to ask about, is there a similar situation, Hamilton, Ottawa, and is that being raised as a concern? Because policy is policy, but only if it's enforced, right? And that's been a big issue.
Yeah, actually it is a huge issue. Like right now, property standards in Hamilton is kind of a hit and miss, and they really aren't enough, I think, officers to, you know, enforce the current bylaws. And, you know, so I don't know, I'm sure Evan has some experience in what's happening in Ottawa too.
Right. Well, we have a related campaign to this rent eviction bylaw is also seeking landlord licensing so that we do have proactive enforcement of property standards. As you brought up, you had the case of just 10 staff assigned to this rent safe program, right? Obviously, it's insufficient. In the case of Ottawa, we have bylaw standards, and which, you know, compel landlords to, you know, have certain plans in place for managing complaints about pests or repairs, etc. However, the burden for the enforcement really does fall on the tenants. You know, they have to demonstrate that they have corresponded with the landlord, making requests before they can, like, escalate it to having bylaw actually conduct an investigation and so forth. So we've been calling for essentially a system which would license landlords and, again, subject them to escalating fines for non-compliance, because we do have fines in place, but obviously they're too low. They're just seen as the cost of doing business. So they're swallowed or absorbed because they feel, you know, it's better than the alternative. But, you know, more broadly, any other business has to have a license, right? To make sure it's following standards. Restaurants, stores, gyms, all these places have to have a license in place, and usually the city is responsible for conducting inspections. It's absurd that this wouldn't apply to landlords. And, you know, to sort of bring a few things together that I wanted to really point out about evictions is that almost 1 in 4, so it's about 22% of all landlords doing evictions in Ontario or rent evictions in Ontario are hiding behind numbered companies. So these are not even necessarily huge, big conglomerates. This is usually people who just see housing as a financial sort of investment to bet on and make make a quick profit. So they pool whatever money they have to buy a house, maybe an affordable housing house, so they can flip it and quickly turn it into something higher profit. But they're hiding behind a numbered company. So when you already don't know what an N13 or an N12 is, and you're hit with this document, and it's not even something like OPG Holdings or Timber Creek, who you can maybe identify who's hitting you with this eviction notice. It's just a sequence of numbers and then Ontario Incorporated. And, you know, if landlords are in the business of providing housing, then they shouldn't be doing shady practices. No other business is so immune to shady practices. You know, you need a license even to busk on the street, but you can pool your money and turn yourself into a 9-number company and then evict an entire community of people. That's not clean business.
Random anecdote here, but I did get kicked off of City Hall property for busking during Nuit Blanche in Toronto, which
well, you should have become a number company, then you would have been fine. that's the trick.
If I could add to one thing too that Evan just said, actually two quick things. Like in my own personal situation, when Evan mentions the numbered companies, now my landlords, they're not actually, I'm very fortunate that I actually do know the names of them, but they make it very confusing. There's the owners who are one company, and then there's a management company, and then there's another management company that's actually has the name on the rent eviction. And me and my fellow neighbors who have also received the N13s, we're kind of at a loss. We're like, who exactly are we filling out this, you know, who are we fighting back against? Who do we put on our landlord-tenant board claims to fight back with things like T6s with repairs? And for us, it's been really confusing. In fact, my neighbor just had to, they were lucky they had their hearing adjourned because they were given the wrong information as to who they were actually filing against. And it really is, in my situation, it's like a management racket that is basically, it just assists the landlord in hiding from accountability when it comes to the LTB and even with the city. We had issues where, with my unit, that the number of the building was listed differently with the city than it was with my my actual lease, and different address with the like the electric company and things like this. So definitely, you know, there's a lot of I call it almost deception too as well.
I want to hit on a few points, like I think that Evan brought up, one about the licensing and how absurd it is. It ties into also the amount of enforcement that goes around it. How could you possibly regulate or enforce something if you don't have an accurate reflection on its numbers or its impact, where they are and who they are? It becomes impossible, but we know we're ruled by landlords. That's why this is so difficult. But I also want to ask, Evan, you were talking about in Ottawa, some folks that were successful in resisting a rent eviction without a bylaw, because that is the case for most people in Ontario still, and even Hamilton until then. Can you share with us how they did that? Was it by legal means? Was there a ruling, or was it just pressure?
Yeah, those are good questions. I'll pull up the exact text just so that I'm certain of what I'm delivering you. But it's important to note that actually, at least in our experience, at least in Acorn's experience, people usually get to stay in their houses, usually successfully resist rent evictions, not because of the help of the landlord tenant board. It's instead because of the pressure and the publicity that organizing with Acorn and allies is usually able to achieve and just staying. So it is possible, in our experience, you know, the best way to resist is staying. You generally have the most to gain the longer you stay. Even if you do end up bought out, you'll get a lot more of a buyout if you stay longer than if, you know, go right away. And going to the landlord-tenant board is always going to take forever. And obviously landlords have more resources than your typical tenant, you know, to wage these sorts of legal battles. So yeah, I'll start with Zépère Blanc in Vanier. So that's actually the part of Ottawa where we have our main office in Acorn. In March 2021, tenants living in two buildings on Zépère Blanc and Vanier received knocks on their doors from their new landlords, OPG Holdings, who demanded inspections of their unit and that they sign N-11s to voluntarily vacate. So half of the tenants left. They did not understand, or it wasn't clear to them, or they just didn't really feel they had the resources to fight, that they legally still actually have the right to, you know, stay and contest it and, you know, attend a hearing at least with the LTB. After those tenants left, OPG Holdings threatened the remaining tenants to evict them by the end of August for major renovations. And it was, again, sort of knocks on the doors, demanding inspections and things like that, which, you know, is not, well, it's violating, but it's not even above board legally. So Acorn, essentially, a number of those tenants became leaders of the local Acorn chapter. They got in touch with Acorn, and we held demonstrations on Des Pablons. We connected this to preserve fighting to save affordable housing, because we're losing in Ottawa 31 units of affordable housing for every new unit of affordable housing built, which means we'd have to build 31 times faster to just break even. So we were able to rally the support of the community to attend big demonstrations, to demand meetings with the OPG Holdings so that we could, you know, discuss this. And eventually, you know, OPG Holdings, I guess, retreated. So, but it was collective action and public pressure and just the determination of tenants to not be bullied out of their places of living that kept them there. This was a little bit close in Vanier. And this is kind of interesting because of the difference between N-11s and N-12s and N-13s. But basically, there's the N-13, which is where it's you're ordered to vacate to conduct renovations, and then there are N-12s or N-11s, which I think N-11s. And the difference is N-11s direct the tenant to vacate, but not for a renovation, but so that the landlord can have a family member move in their place. We had this landlord was trying to sell a complex of affordable housing. It's easier to sell a property when it's all vacancies. So they issued basically the family eviction notice to everybody in the complex as if they were going to like move in every one of their cousins to, you know, yeah. And then, you know, when that obviously didn't work, they then changed it to N-13s, which just shows you, you know, the room for abuse in this sort of model that we have. Many of the tenants did stay and they joined Acorn. Same thing, organized direct actions. We get CBC, CTV, like news people out there, and just a lot of these developers, they're just like looking, they're not looking for anything difficult, right? They treat their housing as a financial investment. They're looking in to get in quick buck. If it becomes more of a headache just because the tenants are getting involved, their city councilors and other people who can, you know, put pressure on them, they'll generally back off. But it does take like a lot of work for people who are in those types of vulnerable situations. I'll come up with Manor Village, which is in another suburb of Ottawa. The community was living in renting townhouses, which were between $1,100, $1,300 a month. Many of the tenants had been there for more than 20 years. So the property manager, Smart Living Properties, issued N-13 eviction notices to Manor Village tenants for renovations, because they were hoping to turn these homes into high-end student housing and triple the rent. So Acorn did organize with the tenants. At first, Smart Living refused to meet with the tenants as a group. Tenants were also confronted with purposeful neglect of maintenance, so refusing to do repairs so that people will give up and just leave. Constant door knocking from Smart Living agents, and were being told verbally that their right to return to their units after renovations were done would not be honored, and that tenants didn't stand a chance. So Smart Living tried to escalate the process by offering buyouts that were barely more than the legal minimum of 3 months' rent. But Acorn members held strong and resisted, knowing that they had the right to defend their homes and that the offers were only going to increase, or it's going to you're going to be able to stay. So because Acorn member organized and stay united, offers gradually increased to $70,000 for, you know, a buyout in the end. So this all came to a head when a couple of weeks before Manor Village tenants and Smart Living scheduled hearing at the landlord-tenant board, Smart Living finally caved to the pressure created by the Acorn actions, and they rescinded their eviction notices to let tenants stay in their home. So a lot of people did get to stay in these townhouses, but nearly 100 households left during the process. And it kind of goes back to what Santiago was saying about how when you're evicting people, it's not just it's stressful enough to make someone move, but you're also destroying these communities, right? Like, these people have been here for more than 20 years. You're relocating all these people. And, you know, you think of how disruptive that is for kids who have to change schools, for people who have to change doctors and other healthcare providers. You know, it's there's all sorts of multiplying effects, compounding effects. And so it's unfortunately, again, like, we can win lots of victories, but there's a failure of the people who should be responsible when it falls to Acorn and tenant organizing to make shady businesses behave properly.
Absolutely. That's a lot of effort that some people don't have. One of the maddening parts about it, because I was reading one of the articles, I think produced because of Acorn Ottawa's work, it came out of the Tenant Rights Council that I think Evan was involved with there, where you folks surveyed and then had a town hall and really got a lot of input from tenants on their main concerns, what they were facing, to get empirical data as well as lived experience. And one of the things that came out of that that was pretty obvious was there were 60% of folks were waiting for repairs with the same landlords that are just so determined to renovate and upgrade these units. So I don't know, I think we've danced around it, but we've not explicitly said, like, this has zero to do with bettering the units. It is entirely a cash grab and using loopholes within our system to jack up rent as much as they can.
It's a lucrative cash grab, too. It's 35.6% is the average rent increase on a vacant unit in 2023. It's quite a bit.
Yeah, like, these people don't do repairs, right? Like, we know they don't do repairs.
Well, in my building, right now I pay $814. And some of the people that had, I guess they basically got kind of bullied out from, you know, lack of repairs, pest control, cleanliness, just a ton of stuff, you know, all the usual harassment that you read about. And those units have been rented for $1,500, $1,600. My landlord told me that they could easily rent my unit for $1,600. And, you know, basically told me I should just shut up about complaining about repairs and the cleanliness and should be just thankful I'm paying $800. And actually, in the area of Hamilton I live in, it's a dangerous neighborhood. And, you know, I mean, it's a little community. It's called Barton Village. But, what I was paying before, say, 5 years ago, it even felt like a lot for that neighborhood, you know, because you're putting up with a lot of crime and stuff like that as well. And so now the bottom, like, you know, the bottom number is about 1600 for, like, say, the roughest area in the city in the same building where they're not, the hallways are still gross and they're still pests. They never properly address issues. So even the people that are paying $1,500 and $1,600, they're dealing with the same terrible level of maintenance that I'm dealing with at $814. So it's enough. So that's double. That's, you know, they've literally doubling the rents. And I wouldn't be surprised if in a year from now, you know, who knows what happens to me there, but they'll try to charge $1,800. I've got a good view of the escarpment. And, you know, it's a nice little apartment, but, you know, that's terrible. And it's gouging on a level that I've never seen before. I've been personally hounding the federal government to actually do something about this kind of gouging, because this gouging is not allowed in just about anything. I mean, even groceries, not necessarily all of them have been doubled, getting there, but it's, you know, it only seems to be happening, doubling and tripling within the rental market, you know?
Yeah, it's a particularly gross form of exploitation when people take essential goods and services that, you know, at the end of the day, we need a roof over our head. We need somewhere to go to sleep. It's not optional whether or not we rent. We have to do it. So we have to pay whatever we have to pay for it. And so they can charge, they can keep upping the price. And it's up until we literally cannot afford it anymore. We pay whatever we have to. That kind of exploitation, it's horrible.
And it's created a problem with the food banks. Because, and I know in Hamilton, I talked to a lot of people, they don't even have enough money for rent. It's not a question of, oh, I've got only 100 or 200 for groceries. It's like, I'm short 200 for rent. And you've got people putting these, this extra amount on their credit cards, or they have to try to, you know, get help from relatives. And it's just unprecedented.
Yeah. I remember back when, 2016, when I first moved to the neighborhood where I live, Parkdale in Toronto, I was splitting a rent, a one bedroom. It was $1,200 a month. And I remember I used to be able to spend only $80 every 2 weeks on groceries. And that was enough for me to get by. I was good. Nowadays, you know, I'm in a different apartment in Parkdale, but it's $2,100 and gross. God, 80 can be like 2-3 meals nowadays. It's insane how much the unaffordability has grown. Lauren, I wanted to ask a bit more about, you know, your current battle with your rent eviction. Can you tell us a bit more?
Yeah, sure. It was about halfway through last September. After quite a bit of, I had been pushing for some, you know, mild to small repairs, really. My landlord, served me the N-13 and, told me I had till, January 31st of, 2024 to be gone. So they basically give me 3 months' notice. And on my, in fact, mine was listed as a, it was listed on the N-13 as a demo eviction, but it's actually really a rent eviction. And there's really no need for them to, there's just no grounds for demolishing my unit or the other people that they've served the N-13s to. And so, the first thing, I joined Acorn quite a bit before I was served by N-13 because I kind of knew it was coming. I could tell by the harassment, the abuse, the lack of repairs, the attitude, that they were giving me. I knew it was coming. So learning about Acorn through the news and stuff, I joined of course, met Olivia, who's been a great help to me and just, you know, all the other people that joined. And so I basically refused to leave because the N13 noticed is not something you don't have to move out. That's one big advice I'd give to everybody is just, you know, just kind of disregard it in a sense and seek consultation, you know, either join Acorn, you know, and even, you know, I know that Acorn, even if someone, you know, is really, really living, you know, in poverty, that Acorn will give them, offer advice and offer free clinics to come and learn how to fight it. And then, so then I went to the Hamilton Legal Clinic and, I got myself a lawyer there because actually I'm on ODSP because I unfortunately have a type of cancer. And I was fortunate to, you know, be in a low income bracket to actually receive the legal clinic help. And I believe legal clinics exist, you know, across the different big cities, right? I'm not entirely sure, you know, whether every city has it or not, but hopefully they're working on that. And so with that help, it gave me, of course, a little bit of hope that, you know, that it wasn't the end of the world yet. And there's, like right now, anyone that gets an N13 or any of these notices, an LTB hearing, a landlord-tenant board hearing, isn't even going to happen for, you know, 7-8 months, even a year. As far as I know, some people, it's been over a year, right? Since then, after they served me the N13, the level of harassment increased. And, you know, my landlord has resorted to, you know, they won't even clean the halls sometimes. I've had flooding and leaking in my unit 8 times. In 1 year, you know, I've had to have property standards chase them down, I think 4 or 5 times now. I've done a lot of communicating with my local MP. I live in a Ward 3 of Hamilton, and our local MP in Ward 3 is one of the champions of the new bylaw. So I've had some support from them and lots of great support from Acorn and I'd want to add too that through Acorn, being a member, I was able to have Acorn apply for the Tenant Defense Fund, which was created by the City of Hamilton. I forget exactly when, but I guess maybe about a year or something like that. And that for me is a real life-saving, a real lifesaver to be lucky enough to get that money to fight my N13 notice.
As I'm listening to Lauren's story of neglect within the unit and as a form of harassment, but also just being a shitty landlord, I wonder if like a sustained period of that and lack of mitigation then works to their advantage, to the landlord's advantage. And then they can say, oh, look at all these things that are wrong with the unit. I have to get in there and completely fix it all. And, you know, got to get an engineer to say that it requires someone to actually move out so that you could do these rather than just accommodate for them. But not only does it make your living conditions unbearable, that's the idea, but it kind of reinforces their case, right? That they need to do repairs, but it's only because of their own neglect. But that won't matter to the landlord-tenant board. You know, if you're displaying a unit that needs an overhaul, then it doesn't really matter whose fault it is at that point. It all falls on the tenant, not with the new bylaw.
That's exactly what they've done in my situation. And, they, you know, I wasn't wise to it at first. I was just kind of naive. I want this fixed, you know, you guys got to fix this. Even there's things I let slide a bit, you know, you end up trying to, you know, like everybody, you're just like, look, I want to reduce all this harassment. I just want it to stop. And so, okay, well, I'll let this slide, or, you know, or maybe you take care of some things, you know, yourself, you know, if they're small enough. And, but the mental toll it's had on me, and I know my fellow tenants, and when I go to Acorn meetings here in Hamilton, I'm sure Evan has experienced this, that you sit and speak with your fellow members and you're just, you know, you're brought to tears by their terrible stories of harassment, and they range from pests to illegal entries, you know, which is a big problem, actually, in my situation, and just about, you know, anybody that's facing a nasty landlord. You feel like your privacy is been stolen from you. You don't know when they're going to come in, and sometimes it's really hard to prove this. I bought a camera, and you know, it the mental toll is incredible, and it's underlooked at. I know that it's something that I speak out very loudly about with politicians on all levels, and you know, I've had them send a crisis people to my door because they're so concerned about the kind of abuse I've suffered, and you know, and yeah, so I'm sure Evan has a few stories about that.
That's so validating, Lauren. When I used to rent in Toronto, I had a landlord that would not give notice for replacing the filter, like seemingly mundane things. I don't know whether they weren't organized or whether it was a harassment thing, but I had real anxieties about people coming into my space. I had injuries that left me unable to walk at points. So like I was really vulnerable when like two men came into my unit that I did not know. And really nobody took those concerns seriously. Like that was so minor. Like, oh, what do you need notice for? We're just doing this. We're just doing that. But yeah, you have no sanctity of your own safe space at all. It's just another reminder that you live under somebody's thumb, right? That you live in someone else's land, under someone else's rules. And it's very degrading to, and then to ask them to fix things that should already be fixed, right? You try to make yourself small and to avoid that.
And all these people having keys to your unit, I've probably had, you know, 30 different people come into my unit because they keep, a lot of guys quit because there's people that quit these management companies because they actually have morals. And
you mean they're not also good employers?
No, right. Shocking. No, they're terrible. Shocking. They're terrible. My actual landlord is, it's almost every couple months, it's a different repair guy. And some of them actually, I generally myself, you know, try to work with the repair guys because they're in the middle. They're just, you know, they're generally not the one that's purposely trying to harass you. But it starts to add up. We've been through 9 managers in my building in about 5 years. And so you don't even get to the point where you don't even know who you speak to. You just might have a different person. And those people, they have keys. Then, you know, my landlord was doing fake fire inspections. 1 year, or in a period of, I think it was 28 months, 26 months or 20, they wanted in my unit around 50-something times, right? I worked it out. It was approximately like every 17 days. And it was just a scale of harassment, you know, that one city worker said it was one of the worst they'd heard of as far as the illegal entries go.
Before we run out of time, I want to talk about 2 possible strategies. Both of you have spoken about the detriment of people not knowing what their rights are or not having the energy, capacity, resources to assert those rights, right, to secure them. So I imagine a lot of your work is or should be focused on know your rights type campaigns, events, organizing. Like, not every building is organized, not every tenant is organized yet.
So, but in the meantime, like, you've got a rent eviction law coming in Hamilton that people need to know about, and otherwise find chapters or the means to resist. So can you tell us kind of briefly what tactics you use to get those rights out there to folks and point them in a direction they can go before it happens, right before they're hit with those N13s that can be so devastating?
Promoting know your rights is pretty important. We've definitely held a couple of workshops in the past year specifically on how to hold your landlord accountable for repairs, basically how to act on your right, how to apply your existing rights as they exist, limited as they are, for enforcement of, you know, property and standards, repairs, pest control, stuff like that. And we have websites, we have QR codes. Everybody should go to our website and sign all our petitions. But one thing I would say that I think is very helpful is for anybody who is concerned about ever receiving N13s, who has any sort of concern about their landlord and doesn't know what to do. This might not get you very far, but it's better than nothing. And even if it doesn't get you very far, it, I think, contributes to a climate or an atmosphere which would be more advantageous for everybody to have a stronger awareness of tenant rights, is call your city councilor, your MPP, your MP, even if they are people who you politically do not agree with, or do, even if you think they will not be on your side, it's important for this to be registered. Because like I said, there were something like only 17 N13s filed for Manor Village, and there were 100 households which were vacated. So the fact that the numbers are shocking, it means it's happening to so many people and people aren't talking about it, at least to the people who should be responsible for it. And so even if your MPP or whoever is not someone who's going to generally be on your side, it's important that their office hears about it. It's important that gets registered, and because that makes it potentially something which you can then get more attention for. If you're trying to build publicity and public pressure, that's something that could potentially attract more attention from something like CTV or CBC. And if you can get that sort of pressure, that shapes, you know, the way people approach politics, and that shapes how office holders, you know, that office holders very much think in terms of their voters as people who they are generally a minority, especially at the municipal and provincial levels, because most people don't vote. So they're very often not thinking of tenants as voters. They're thinking about, or at least tenants who are struggling with affordability, as voters. Because their stories just aren't told. Like, and that's why I think it's so important that Lauren and you told your stories. But just as another sort of, I may be off track here again, in terms of knowing people's rights, I think the simplest thing for me to emphasize, hearing from what I just heard from you two, is even if you don't really think that maybe a rent eviction bylaw is going to fix the affordability crisis, you know what it might stop is, this is just crime. This is crime. Entering illegally, getting in people's spaces, harassing them is crime. And the fact that it's the most powerful people doing it to the people who are like the least advantaged to resist it makes it all the more distasteful to like society at large. So even if you're not someone who might be a Blueprints of Disruption regular listener, maybe you're someone who might be more inclined to read The Sun or whatever, yeah, and you don't necessarily believe in these types of policies, well, maybe you'd at least like to take action against not doing repairs and subjecting people to harassment, because those are crimes and those cost us, right? If you're putting people, if you're not doing repairs and subjecting people to illness, therefore, who pays for that? All of us, right? The landlord is offshoring or is inflicting these costs on the people. So what I really like to just sort of say is, you know, it's not just about tenants. It's a question of, like, do we want to live into the society where, why is there this double standard? No other, in any other case, breaking and entering, sniffing around people's places and harassing them is something which people need to be held accountable for. Why are landlords and property managers suddenly immune from this?
Yeah, and also, if I could add just one quickly, what, you know, everything Evan said there about the organizing and all that is really the most important thing. And like he said, you know, people have difficulties understanding politics. A lot of people don't pay attention. I recommend people, you know, learn a little bit at least about their local councillor and their beliefs. And if it doesn't seem like they're helping out, you know, to look for a councillor that does. And if there's no Acorn group in your city, you know, consider being the one that starts it and contact big cities like Hamilton, Ottawa, and try to get a hold of folks like Evan and Olivia, and, you know, see if they can, because with the internet, you know, they can give a lot of advice on how to start the, you know, a grassroots organization. Because that's what it's about. Because when you have a tenants organization in a building, even on the books now, it's illegal for the landlord to try to stop you from meeting. They can get, I think, like a 50 or 100,000, a big fine. And so there is some really good things you can do to get yourself set up to fight, you know. And or even if you don't even have problems with your landlord, I would recommend people start a tenant association in their building, even if it's just for smaller issues, and something big comes up, then you've got people that can support you and help you, you know, even emotionally. And it makes a big difference, a huge, huge difference, you know.
I mean, hell, even just the barbecues that can come from that.
Movie night.
Right. Someone to watch some hockey games with or something. Who knows, you know. It goes a long way. With Acorn myself, I live alone. I've, you know, been a lot of isolation. I live alone in Hamilton. And Acorn has actually been a really great thing to do, to get out and meet people and understand, you know, something I didn't know anything about before. I was a lifelong songwriter and musician. And, you know, I didn't understand much about, you know, organized groups and advocates and stuff. And it's very fascinating. And you end up helping other people in the process once you learn about it. And, you know, it's just good for, like Evan said, for our country. What kind of a country do we want to live in? A country that's full of greed, that, you know, from every aspect of life. And the only way we're going to get out of fighting back against the big greedy entities is to organize. And as Canadians in the past, we've kind of been a little bit slow on that because, you know, for many years, Canada, I guess, had it kind of good in comparison to a lot of other nations, you know?
When I started my question way back when, I hinted that there were perhaps two strategies I wanted to talk about, and both of you have kind of set me up to ask the second one, because Evan, both of you talked about the power imbalance, and Lauren, you're driving home the importance of tenant organizing into, you know, tenant unions. And we had Ricardo Trengen on not that long ago. He wrote the book, The Tenant Class, and Keter. And Santiago's holding up a copy of the book, of course. And he's been doing his homework. He leaves us off, and we didn't really get to talk about it, so I just wanted to ask you folks about the idea of then securing collective bargaining rights or other rights akin to union rights for tenant unions. Because, Evan, you know, you talked about the efforts that go in, even once you have the tenant union and you're organized and you've got resources and the know-how, it's a lot of energy, and you're, like, really just pleading in the end. Like, there's not a lot of legal structure there and whatnot. And I want to just know if you thought, let's just imagine it's possible, okay? Would that be a really huge tool for you? Would you like to daydream about what you would do with collective bargaining rights as a tenant group?
I mean, I definitely, that'd be better than a daydream. That's certainly something I have. That sounds too good to be true. So I don't think I've ever even entertained thinking that far ahead, to be honest. It sounds amazing, right? But like, I've read that book as well, The Tenant Class. I thought it was interesting. Yeah, it's a great question, but I think for me it goes back to the same sort of principle as I was saying before, is I don't think that if this business exists of landlords providing housing, then they should be subject to the same rules as any other business, that standards should be set, that they shouldn't be allowed to offload their costs onto, you know, the public. You know, they should do business cleanly. And I think clean businesses are businesses, this is just the standard we have for business generally, is that businesses are supposed to respect the collective bargaining rights of their employees, and they actually can get in trouble for violating the terms of those collective bargaining, some of those collective bargaining rights. So I think that would be, you know, pretty advantageous. I think that would be in those terms, I think, you know, that would be strong. In terms of organizing, you know, collective bargaining rights, though, like, it's a really interesting question. What do you think, Lauren?
Well, yeah. Evan's going to chew on that for a bit.
Really, you know, anything is possible. And, you know, in Canada and so many places around the world, you know, people are... will never cease to surprise you what they're capable of. And as powerful as governments are and large corporations, you know, you only have to look at Acorn. You know, if we just looked at Acorn itself, you know, just a few years ago, most people had never heard of it. And I think now there's like way over 200,000 members across Canada. And I'm not like well-versed in, you know, some of the numbers that some of the other organizers are. I'm more or less just a member that does a little trying to contribute a bit, you know. But, you know, when you look at the short time that Acorn has been kind of at this in Hamilton or some of the other cities, it's amazing what they've achieved. And if you looked back a few years ago, a lot of people might have been kind of pessimistic about that. And say, well, you can't do that. You're not going to go up against all these huge corporations and entities that often, you know, right now in Ontario with the Ford government, he's not exactly helping people on our level and renters. So, you know, it's very possible. You know, last night in the President of the United States' speech, for the first time I heard a leader mention about high rents. And, you know, it's something we don't hear enough from Justin Trudeau. You know, so, you know, it's possible. And I think that Canadians are waking up to the fact that we've been kind of screwed for too long. And now we're desperate and we're running with our tails between our legs to try to catch up to how badly we've been gouged. And I think with the large organizations starting up with Acorn and actually a lot of support from other advocate groups, you know, I know when I go to, I was a delegate at the recent bylaw day down at City Hall in Hamilton. And one of the things that really impressed me was the amount of people from different, you know, organizations, you know, essentially allies of Acorn and people that were there to support, even though they had, you know, their own little issues. You know,
so not necessarily housing advocates.
That's right, yeah. I mean, there's people that are from Black Lives Matter that are you know, take part in supporting, you know, different, and I think one is called ACTO. And then you've got the disability justice folks that, you know, are just essential to these types of fights. And, you know, a lot of these, you know, the legal, like my, the lady that's representing me, she received, her and a number of other lawyers received a grant from one of the Toronto Raptors in order to I forget how much it was, but it allowed them to do this kind of legal work without, you know, trying to find placement, you know, and worry about, you know, getting income, you know, to fight for justice and equality and human rights and stuff like that, you know. So it's all really coming together. And, you know, it's great, you know, with a podcast like yourself, you know, and what you guys do to help illuminate this fight, you know, and get everyone thinking on the same level. You know, it's anything's possible, and who knows what kind of bargaining power we're going to have, right? You know, I know that Acorn is starting to work on the grocery fight and protesting against these, you know, ruthless grocery owners. No one even knows what they call them yet. They're like grocery barons, I guess. And I think it's going to have an impact. I really think when you protest out front of a local FreshCo or whoever's, you know, not paying their employees but gouging everybody, it's going to, you know, no one wants to be embarrassed in front of their community. And it gets in the newspapers because it's becoming trendy for CBC, CTV, and Global, City TV in Toronto. They're starting to cover these things. And, you know, I you know what? People need to continue to pressure the press to support, you know, this whole collective fight against greed. And it's even beyond housing. You know, there's a lot of inequalities in the workforce and everything too. So I think anything's possible.
You know? Thank you. Is there anything that we didn't bring up? Or Santiago, did you have any questions that we've missed?
Not so much questions, more maybe I'll take a 30-second statement about how I think one of the things that's important is not just always, obviously we're constantly being placed on the defensive, you know, resisting evictions, trying to fight against rent evictions, all of these things. I think it's important to dream about, you know, what could be possible, because we need to be actively on the offensive against this fight back. Because as much as, you know, we're talking about like the legality of things, a lot of this, the most fucked up things that landlords get away with is perfectly legal, right? And you might have a sympathetic city council or a mayor or something at one moment in time, and then the next election it's gone and they take away the rights, you know. So it's important to, I think that the work that organizations such as yours, such as Acorn, does is really important, because it maintains that constant constant struggle, not just, you know, periodically. And I think that that's important, because we may, you know, if someone's not struggling today, they might be struggling tomorrow, and then they might just need to call up Acorn to help them out,
right? Well, hopefully, so they're already in Acorn when that happens.
Yeah.
We will link everybody to all of your stuff. Like, people will not have trouble finding you.
We're just going to ask a quick favor from all the Blueprints of Disruption listeners. This is your good deed, your good...
We have a call to action.
Day. It's a super simple one, okay? I would like to say that collecting signatures outside of, like, grocery stores, that's a good place to, like, talk with people and meet people. But I would say, seriously, if you... whether you're a renter or not, and as limited as this is, every single day that you, or, you know, every third day, but, you know, maybe just do it, wait for Tuesday, because it's almost the weekend, or I don't know when this is releasing, but whatever. Call your MP, your MPP, and your city councilor and mayor, and, like, and just say, listen, I want you to, like, adopt that anti-rent eviction bylaw that Hamilton adopted, and if you don't do it, you're not going to have my support. And you know what? Since we're dreaming big, also ask them to, like, make to give renters collective bargaining. You know, and you know
put
what?
Put it like, in their head, man.
If every single one of your listeners puts in that, like, just once a week to their elected officials, even if they're people who, like, are against them, then all the means, like, give it to them even more. You know what I say? I'm saying? But that's, anyhow, that's what I'm saying. Like, it'll really, like, help the struggle forward. And it's a small thing that any of you can do. Thanks.
In our city here, actually, you know, with, I know I put a lot of pressure on some of the counselors that might have been on the fence about the bylaw. And I told them my story very passionately in an email. And one counselor emailed me back and they said, you know, he's going to vote for this now. And so it does make a difference, even if they may share a different view. As, if there's one more thing I just could point out, and I'll keep it real quick, is that with the non-market housing. And, you know, I know that Acorn is really pushing for, you know, more social housing and nonprofit housing, and that also provides is a big answer. Not the final answer, but it's something that's really going to help reduce and give some, you know, relief to people if there's more social housing and more nonprofit housing. And I think everybody needs to think a lot more about that, you know, in their daily lives, and you know. Realize that all the monopolization of the large corporations is working against us, and to push their local MPs, like Evan says, you know, and to look into these types of solutions too. And, you know, that you know, basically is something that I think you're going to see a lot more of is going back to the way things used to be, where there was the government used to invest in, you know, social housing and stuff.
Or we could smash capitalism, start again.
That's a good idea.
But we
went for that.
You see, we dream big on the show here. We dream big. Thank you so much for joining us. That was a great discussion. I think a lot of people might have heard of rent evictions, but they can't listen to this episode now without knowing fully what they are and now how to fight back against them. Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Santiago.
That is a wrap on another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. Thank you for joining us. Also, a very big thank you to the producer of our show, Santiago Helu Quintero. Blueprints of Disruption is an independent production operated cooperatively. You can follow us on Twitter at BP of Disruption. If you'd like to help us continue disrupting the status quo, please share our content. And if you have the means, consider becoming a patron. Not only does our support come from the progressive community, so does our content. So reach out to us and let us know what or who we should be amplifying. So until next time, keep disrupting.